afternoon, or good evening if you happen to be joining us from the UK, as our next speaker is. If you ever doubted that we live in a globalized world, you are now going to have a talk from an outstanding individual in the UK who does her work in Indonesia while you're eating lunch in Montreal. It is my delightful pleasure to introduce Yunun Ismawati, who founded a non-governmental organization, Bali Focos, which develops and implements urban environmental management programs focusing on the basic needs for the poor. She's used her environmental engineering expertise to assist poor communities in designing well-coordinated, safe, sustainable sanitation initiatives while prioritizing environmental health and socioeconomic benefits for the people. Together with Ashoka Indonesia and Danan Ecosystem, Ismawati is currently working on a scavenger empowerment program which looks for new social benefit business models for scavengers. She is also working on non-mercury technology for small gold mining communities and promoting mercury-free devices in the healthcare sector. She is the Goldman Environmental Prize recipient in 2009, LEAD Fellow, and Ashoka Fellow. And we're delighted to have her speaking with us today, and welcome.
Thank you, Bob. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you enjoy your meal, and I hope you won't be disturbed with some pictures that I'm going to share with you, because it's on sanitation, as you know, in developing countries, the picture of sanitation in urban poor especially will not be as convenient as in developed countries. So I would like to thank first to McGill for inviting me to join this conference from far away. And thanks to the technology that now we can use high tech to talk and meet and save the carbon footprint. I like that one. Okay, so I would like to start sharing my experience and some thoughts drawing from my experience in Indonesia, especially on the sanitation sector. Hang on. Okay, my presentation is there? Okay. I would like to start with the World Sanitation Map. As we know and learn from the report of Joint Monitoring Plan between UNICEF and WHO, that our sanitation coverage worldwide, it seems like in other part of the world, Sub-Saharan Africa and South Asia are left behind. And on the next chart, we'll see that the target of sanitation likely to be missed in 2015, which is 4 years more. We have only a short period of time to reach a target. The ideal target is to reduce the people who have lacked access to sanitation to 30%, but most likely it will be missed unless we have we joined forces to reduce the number of people with lack of sanitation. So about 2.6 billion people globally, and 72% are living in Asia, which have no access to improved sanitation. And about 1.5 million children below 5 years old die every year. But we can also learn that 7 out of 10 people without improved sanitation live in rural areas. But we have to remember that in urban in urban settlements, population grows more rapidly than in rural due to the urbanization. And in urban areas, shared sanitation is higher than in rural. To some point, I think this kind of sharing facilities is more effective and efficient, and also more cost effective. Learning from Indonesia, in 2007, World Bank study revealed that the economic losses due to poor sanitation services were approximately 15 million per year, $15 million per year, and for us it's a big, big number, and it's about 2.3% of our GDP. And in the last 5 years, the investment for sanitation is very low, and as you see from the chart, that about 63% of our wastewater are treated using septic tanks, and it still continues until now because our national government set a target to have 90% septic tanks to cover our sanitation, which is pity. Economic losses also not only in terms of trade or in income, but also losses in day schools and opportunity to have daily wages. Investment for basic sanitation, World Bank calculated it's about $5.2 per capita per year at least. And the shrimp that you see here is the export, which was refused or objected due to Salmonella bacteria. And that was due to contamination from domestic wastewater. In Indonesia, also about 45% of the population live in urban areas, and in 2020, it will be projected about 60% live in urban areas. Most of city authorities and local governments are not ready with this rapid urbanization, and it's reflected in the infrastructures and services provided by the city. And the lack of planning and anticipation endangered public health, especially women and children in poor urban settlement. But at some point, also sometimes government argue that it's not easy to serve the poor settlement and densely populated areas due to social and economic barrier. One chart showing Jakarta only served by 1% of population Jakarta served by sewerage system is still exists until now. Only some part of commercial areas in Jakarta served by sewerage system, and in Indonesia we have only sewerage system functioning in 8 cities out of 400 cities we have. In the next chart, the number of people without access to basic sanitation in urban areas in Indonesia is higher than other countries in Southeast Asia. We have about 75 million populations lack of access to sanitation, and 24 million of them living in urban areas. And it's create unplanned development and lots of septic tanks. Also showing in this aerial picture, you can see, if you can see through below these houses, maybe some of them have a good or proper septic tanks, but maybe not, and some will be leakages and contaminate the groundwater as well. In Indonesia, we have an umbrella policy on water supply and environmental sanitation services, signed by five ministries, to describe and define the roles and responsibilities of services which can be provided by institutions or joint base or by community. And as an NGO and civil society, I look at the type C as our basis and our reference for to promote more community and community-driven and social entrepreneurship. And this option of type C is very much suit with our local government system, which is promote decentralization and bottom-up processes. This type of community-driven or community-based varied in rural and urban areas, but I'm going to focus on the urban areas. In urban areas, as I mentioned before, that shared facilities or shared services will be more efficient and will be more effective to be built and introduced. But it's not easy to get the people in urban areas because most of them are migrants and moving around very quickly. And only few of them really local inhabitants of poor urban settlements. The communal systems can fill the gaps between the on-site individual system and off-site centralized sewerage system. And if we can see the continuum and the range of cost compared to sewerage centralized system and communal, they can serve the intermediate solutions. I would like to start and with the next slide on the project implementation and participatory approach, learning from one project that I was involved since the beginning in 2001. The project called Sanimas, or Sanitasi oleh Masyarakat, or Sanitation by Community. It's not really 100% community-based or community-driven, but introduced by NGO and facilitated by, at that time during the pilot stage, we were facilitated by the World and the Water Sanitation Program of World Bank and funded by AusAid to develop a model and pilot how to develop the community-based sanitation project. When we're thinking about this, we try to anticipate the program so it can be upscale later on. So it's very important to notice that most of the community-based initiatives usually keep small and small and beautiful, but it's good in some way. But it will be better, much better, if we can replicate it and upscale it. And for the country scale, like Indonesia and other big countries, upscaling and replication is very important. So we learned from 7 cities, and then in 2003, and now since 2005, the program became national programs, and now implemented in 100 cities every year. So the steps that I'm showing here in the chart is showing steps of implementation of the project since the development. Of capacity, facilitation capacity is very important. This is a very important stage because we need to train the facilitators, the technical and social facilitators in the field to be able to facilitate and accommodate the community community dynamics and trigger more community initiatives and ownership. The next step is the community selection using rapid participatory assessment for the problem identification. And on the step 3, development of community action plan, where we introduce informed choices and discuss the community contribution. For this project, community contribute about 4 to 6% from their, either in cash or in kind. So it's not 100% funded by community, but infrastructures, especially provided by local governments and central government. But the management and the decision, what kind of services that they will have in the communities, belong to the community group. Step 4, the implementation, we also add the component of capacity building for the community, especially community committee. And step 5 is on monitoring and evaluation. I will show you later what I mean with that. On the blue chart, there is a certification and labeling. What I mean with certification here is not really certification, but certification to make sure that all the processes and the steps are implemented during the replication and upscaling process. Go to the next slide. I would like to elaborate a little bit about the informed choices. Informed choices is one of the important features in the project implementation, especially on sanitation issues. We talk about the key issue is the wastewater treatment. And talking about wastewater treatment to ordinary people will be challenging because they don't know exactly what is the effluent standard and how to treat and so on and so on. So we developed this informed choices to communicate it to beneficiaries and stakeholders about several components like toilet components, the component one, talking about toilets, and we explained about the options that they have and the consequences. And in component two, for instance, we talk about the piping or the how to discharge and bring the wastewater from one point to another point and the consequences of the operation and maintenance, the complication, and the treatment component, ranging from septic tank, proper septic tank, anaerobic buffer, and for instance, introducing the biodigester as well to be used as the primary treatment and the benefits or advantages of it. Sanitation services options are where and decision making at the various level are really different and dynamic, have different dynamics. At the household level, the decision making of investment are the homeowners, but also in some projects will be donors, because it's really depend on what kind of aid or support provided by the donors. And in some places, local governments who determine or decide what kind of investment. We always introduce the service operators options, or in terms of operation and maintenance option, to remind people that whatever they build need to be maintained. It's not one big shot construction finished and they can use it forever. It needs some maintenance and some treatment to ensure the sustainability of the service. And as you see at the second box is neighborhood, at the neighborhood level, the decision making done by community or committee, and also in some places by settlement developers. It's varied, and service operators, service operations also can be provided by different organizations or institutions. On the next slide, I would like to show you how technology, simple technology, introduced to community and communicated in several community meetings. Not only talking about technology, but also the map. We draw the map together with the community, and then identify a suitable place for, you know, putting the wastewater treatment plant, and then we help them with the proper drawing to ensure that the term of low cost and low cost sanitation is not really like in the past. When we talk about low cost, it means just build whatever you want with a low quality of construction. So although this is the project or the infrastructure built for poor settlement or poor urban communities, it still has to meet certain standards. So some consultations done with the community and explained until they agree with and they understand why they choose this system or that system. After informing them with the options, then the decision making will affect also the sense of ownership of the people, and it will also affect the operation and maintenance. And from that point, after we provide the facility for the community, operation and maintenance is very important to ensure the sustainability. In one picture, you see children playing on top of a green field. The green floor is actually the top of wastewater treatment plant. And in urban areas, now more and more these kind of projects provide space for the community and the children to play around, and also cleaner situations in the community. If you see some pictures showing the water heater, that's the pictures are taken from community toilets, which are managed by community, and the water heater is coming from biodigester. So the biodigester produces methane, and then the methane used by the community. It's really depend on the community options. Some of them want to use it for cooking, and some of them they want to have hot water while they're taking bath, of course, with additional costs for that. And the next picture you see in the Muslim boarding school, usually the sanitation facilities are very poor, and with the improved sanitation facilities, we can also introduce a better sanitation and better use of methane gas for cooking. In the last picture, you see 10 stoves coming from 600 students, and they now saved about 4,000 cubic meters of fireworks every year. And the next slide, you see the operation and maintenance support also provided by the community, by our team or the facilitation team, to ensure the sustainability of services. The facilitation is very important to ensure the sustainability of the services. And we have to accommodate creativities of the community to build strong ownership. In the next slides, you see so many pictures with different features of tiles and ceramics and murals. That's the intention to do that is to accommodate creativities for the community to build their ownership. So when you see in East Java, green representing a strong Muslim colors, so most of them will choose green tile or ceramics for the public toilets. In the other areas, they will choose different style. And after we have all this, you know, ensuring all this facilitation and functioning of the services, we still have to ensure the services and the facility are in function. And to do that, we try to combine the monitoring scheme with the award. So we give award to community groups who can show their good performance in the last 12 months. So every year we give awards for at the city level, at the provincial level, and then now this year we start with the national program, national award. That is from the sanitation project, and I would like to give you another example of how we can facilitate and accommodate and empower a community in urban slums by showing two other examples. Next one is biogas for tofu makers in urban slum areas. This one is in Denpasar. We facilitate by working together with them to provide the biodigester or biogas to treat their wastewater, which is previously discharged to the nearby water stream and smelly and complaints by the neighborhoods and so on. But as can you see that in urban areas, the challenge we face are space. We don't have enough space, and sometimes when we talk about the permit to build a proper treatment plant, well, we cannot argue with the standards, but we have only limited space, so we build under the like a garage or next to the house. And this kind of simple technology, biodigester, can be used by, this one was designed for 10 tofu makers and 5 chicken slaughterhouses. And the investment is about 13,000 US dollars. 35% are the contributions from the tofu makers, and the operational cost shared by the tofu makers, and that's agreed by them, about $25 a month. And then as the benefit of it, they can use the biogas for cooking and for other purposes. And 8 families, now they have additional income by cooking, ready-to-eat food and then sell it in the motorcycles, they sell it, the vegetables running around, and they now can have additional income from that. The next one is on the Decentralized Solid Waste Management project. We call it DESWAM, Decentralized Solid Waste Management program, which promotes waste minimization and waste management at the community level, and try to reduce the amount of waste to landfill by 70%. The approach we use is starting from the household level, composting, and then at the neighborhood level using the material recovery facility, facilitated by local governments and by donors, so we can reduce the amount of waste sent to the landfill and also improve the situation, the neighborhood, as well as provide the economic benefits for the local people. The community-based solid waste management now implemented nationwide and endorsed by the Ministry of Environment and Ministry of Public Works. This program managed by the community, but most of all of the infrastructures provided by government, and one MRF or material recovery facility served about 500 until 1,000 households, and this system or the services managed by the community. From the monthly payments agreed upon by all the members of the community, they can have savings, and the savings then reinvested in the, at the community level for different purposes. And now we are trying also to link it up with a program of activities or under climate carbon credits or voluntary carbon financing. We're still in the research stage now, but the intention to do this is to support the long-term sustainability of the program. My last page will be on synthesizing all the experiences that the capacity building and demonstration at the micro and meso level is very important and crucial, especially when we try to promote and develop the community-driven project and to provide more opportunities for the community to get involved and have that ownership for this project. Based on the dialogue we have in the field, and then we should develop the capacity building measures and try it out in the demo projects, most likely in different or various areas which representing different dynamics, that would be better. And lessons learned from that pilots should be synthesized and documented as a best practices, and later on translated into a benchmark, which should be achieved in the next stage of the project when it's upscaled. And the multi-stakeholders network establishment is very important to support the upscale or the replication process. So private sector, publics, and NGOs, civil society groups are really important to sit together so we can speed up the process and share the responsibilities to achieve the target and to help more people get access to improved sanitation. The last important point is on monitoring, evaluation, and impact assessment. It's very crucial for the sustainability of services, and especially for donor, will be important to see that the aid or the support they provided will be last longer. And even if it's in very dynamic community, like in urban settlements, the monitoring and evaluation and impact assessment need to be formulated innovatively so we can make sure that the system or the services which once installed and built can last longer. So thank you for your attention, and I'll be happy to have some questions. Thank you.
So thank you very much for a description of a truly innovative and outstanding program. I think we do have time for one or two questions. Do we have the technology to do questions? Okay, great. Maybe if you can go to the microphone, introduce yourself, and ask your question.
On the question of waste management, what is the policy concerning children's diapers and women's hygienic sanitation? And the second thing is, on the sanitation facilities, what uses have been made on waterless toilets?
I'm sorry, waterless toilets?
Yes, well, there's a whole system where you have toilets that you don't use any water, you use chemicals instead. Have there been any widespread use of that kind of service?
Okay, thank you. Okay, the first one on the waste management, we still have problems with napkins and baby napkins and women napkins. But as you know, that in urban poor settlements, we don't have baby napkins mostly. Well, some of them use baby napkins, but not as aggressive as in middle income settlements. For the women napkins, we try to put it at the separate bins or separate containers and goes to the landfill, because we don't have the solution yet for that. But we try to promote back to the old days by promoting clothes and so on for women. But you know, we live in a disposable era, and it's not easy to change the market into the old times. But yes, we don't have any policy, national policy in place yet on that issue. But in some places now, people try to introduce the women sanitary napkins in clothes. And And on the second one, on the sanitation facility, since the treatment plant that we use rely on biological treatment, we do not encourage the community to use chemicals for cleaning. So when we try to introduce the system and operation maintenance to the community, we also introduce a simple and more nature-friendly cleaning services. But I'm not sure if I'm answering your questions on sanitation lift.
Well, the question is, what happens in places where there's a shortage of water?
Okay. In most places in urban areas that this project happening, we use water. But in other areas which has very few water, we try to introduce other system. But it's not easy, like the Ecosan toilet and the composting toilet. But it's not easy to change that mindset, because people getting used to with using water, and especially Indonesian communities, majority are Muslim. So the volume of water used are very little. So we call it low flush toilet. At least the water that we provided is only to flush and to cleanse the animal.
Thank you.
Yeah, so
we have time for one more question.
Thank you. I was just was fascinated by the last slide that you showed us that illustrated the relationship between projects at the micro and meso level and the expansion to what appeared to be the national level. And I wonder if you could speak a little bit about the dynamics involved in starting with what are often pilot projects or demonstration projects and actually moving it up the system and disseminating those best practices or those new approaches.
Thank you. Yes, it's a bit challenging because in the beginning, when the program developed by NGOs, you know that the value of community empowerment and participation are very strong, and it's not really 100% reflecting what's government vision. And to go upscale and support it nationwide, we need to get the support from the policymakers and government officials and fit with their vision of community development and bottom-up processes. So we try to find ways how to set the program from ideal stage. For instance, have sets of meetings. In the beginning, we have 18 times of community meetings as a mandatory for this project. But then, because when we go upscale and introduce it to the local government and central government, and they have time-bound for implementing the project, we have to implement the project within 1 year because we are following the government fiscal budget here. So it was not allowed. We didn't have time to spend 18 meetings, community meetings, which is, you know, ideally we should do that. But also at the same time, community in urban areas are very, very busy. You know, they work 24 hours. They work different shift, and they don't want us to, you know, hassling them too much with too many meetings. It's really different with the dynamics in rural areas where when you apply the participatory approach, you have to stay and live in with them for 3 months and so on and so on. But in urban areas, you have to find a way how to do the program effectively and efficiently, but not forgetting the community involvement. So we try to accommodate and compromise with the situation at the community level as well as the government situation. And then we come up with 12 meetings, community meetings, at least that's the minimum, 12 community meetings. And also the requirements of the supports from local governments for some amount of fund for capacity building as well as for the infrastructures. And when we try to fit into the fiscal budget year of government, we also find difficulties because in the beginning we start the program every January and then end it in December. But then we learned that the fiscal budget year proposal developed every year in July or August. So we have to start the program 6 months or four months before that to be able to select a community so it can be mentioned in the fiscal budget year next year. So the selection process, in the beginning we said we don't want to mention any community, selected community in the project because it's a self-selection process. And to local governments, it's a bit difficult for them to justify that because when they allocate the budget, they have to mention which community which will be will receive the fund. So we try to accommodate and try to have some shift and modifications in the program implementations. So when we finished the pilot in 2003, our international NGO partner from Germany able to tap the fund from German government to bridge the transition process between the pilot to the nationwide, so we can test the pilots into a more cities. So the first pilot in seven cities, conducted in seven cities. And then during the transition periods, we were able to implement in 15 and 16 cities just to test out and confirm that the pilot is workable and ready for upscale. So after that 2 years transition period, then the national governments confirmed that they feel confident and because this is evidence-based policy making, so they try when they saw that the pilot is workable in the field and still functioning after 4 years, then they decided to adopt this program as a national program. And after that, more support from donors like ADB and World Bank now chipping into that project for the upscale and nationwide programs. And even another programs on sanitation now try to accommodate to accommodate the community projects like that and accommodate it in the city sanitation strategy. So it's triggered by this pilot, and then at the national level, we work a bit harder to try to link it up all related agencies, and to get the supports from, for instance, get the support from Ministry of Health on the hygiene and education part, because it's become a national program, it should be also a national program under the Ministry of Health to support this kind of education and capacity building. So it needs lots of efforts and dynamics and lobby to approach the national government and to get this go upscale. But I think the crucial part is to show that the pilot is workable and acceptable by the community. Of course, we have some failures in the field. In the first year, we have one failed project. And then in the second year, the second pilots, we have about out of 14, maybe two projects failed in terms of they could not functioning for more than 1 year. So, yeah, but now we have more problems because when we go upscale, the project, it's a mass project now, and it's really crucial to have good facilitators in the field and good facilitators with heart, because they have to work with the community and they have to spend a couple of months with the community. And to ensure that the decision taken by the community is the voice of the people, not the voice of the facilitator. So that's a bit challenging.
Okay, thank you very much. We're going to have to close, but please join me in thanking Ms. Ismawadi for joining us today.
Thank you.
So our next session on climate change and clean energy is actually right next door, beginning now. So if we could quickly move there, we'll commence with that. And again, thank you.